Oh, who can it be at this hour?
A patient. He'll have to go out.
Oh. Will someone see to the door?
I insist. You will excuse my calling so late. I'm in such trouble. I do so want a little help.
Why? Oh, it's Kate Whitney. How you startled me, Kate. I had no idea who you were when you came in.
I didn't know what to do, so I came straight to you.
Oh, it was very sweet of you to come. Now, you must have some wine and water and sit here comfortably and tell us about it. Or should you rather that I sent James off to bed?
Oh, no, no. I want the doctor's advice and help, too. It's about Isa. He's not been home for 2 days. I'm so frightened about him.
Come along. I'm sure he'll return.
Isa Whitney.
Sit here.
Poor woman to have such a husband. A man wholly addicted to opium. I remember the last time I saw him. Yellow, pasty face, drooping lids and pinpoint pupils, huddled in a chair. The wreck and ruin of a noble man.
James. James.
Yes, yes, my love.
We must help find Isa.
Yes. Yes, of course, sir. Now, Kate, have you any idea where he might be? Has he fallen prey to his old habit?
I fear he has. He's been gone for almost 2 days. I have prayed and begged for his deliverance, but he cannot shake off the spell. In recent months, he's confined his indulgence to a day and has come back in the evening. He says little and sits in his chair, pale and twitching. But this time, he has not returned. Oh, Mary, what am I to do?
Oh, Kate. Kate, we will find him.
Where does he go to find...
I am almost sure he's gone to the Bar of Gold in Upper Swandam Lane. It's an opium den on the farthest east of the city. I would have gone myself, but I fear to...
My dear girl, there's no question of you going to such a place. I will go now, and if he's there, I will bring him back within 2 hours. Now, don't distress yourself any further.
Well, so much for my armchair and cheery sitting room. Still, she is a friend of my wife's, and I am Isa Whitney's medical advisor. So let's hope he takes my advice. Lord knows what the cabman thinks of me, charging off to Swandam Lane at the dead of night. Oh, what a vile place this is. Dark, unwholesome. High warehouses punctured by sightless windows. The smell of poverty and disease. That London should have such places, it is a disgrace. Ah, this must be it. Between a slop shop and a gin shop.
Cabby, stop here.
Right, Rosa.
Cabby, I want you to wait here.
Very good, sir. If you're looking for the Bar of Gold, sir, it's just down there.
What? Oh. Yes, sir. Thank you. Good Lord, I can't see a thing. Just a flight of uneven steps leading down to a black hole, like the mouth of a cave. Well, down we go. Abandon hope, all ye who enter here. Oh! Must be careful. These steps are worn. No doubt by the ceaseless tread of drunken feet. Ah, there's an oil lamp. That must be the door. Well, I'll just open the latch. Ah, the stench of opium. How can I find Isa here? The room seems to go on forever, like a tunnel.
He must be here, somewhere, in one of these wooden berths stacked to the ceiling. But I can barely see through this choking brown opium smoke. Each berth has its own body, like some grub. Inert, bowed shoulders, bent knees, dark, dead eyes. Each one lit by a red circle of light. Now bright, now faint. Opium. The burning poison waxing and waning in their pipes. Oh, God. I must find Isa and get out of this place. No point asking any of this lot. Oh, perhaps that old man sitting by the brazier at the far end. There's a little more light there at any rate.
Would that gentleman care for a pipe? Very best quantity.
No, I don't want a pipe, thank you. I have not come to stay. I believe there's a friend of mine here, Mr. Isa Whitney, and I wish to speak with him.
Isa Whitney?
Watson? Is that you, Watson?
Isa! Thank goodness. Are you all right?
Tell me, Watson. What o'clock is it?
Nearly 11.
Of what day?
Friday, June 19th.
Oh, good heavens. I thought it was Wednesday. It is Wednesday. What do you want to frighten a chap for?
I tell you, it is Friday, man. Your wife has been waiting these 2 days for you. You should be ashamed of yourself.
So I am. But you've got it mixed, Watson. For I have only been here for a few hours. 3 pipes. 4 pipes. I forget how many. But I will go home with you. I wouldn't frighten Kate. Poor little Kate. Give me your hand. Have you a cab?
Yes, I have one waiting.
Then I shall go in it. Oh, but I must owe something. Find out what I owe, Watson. I am all off colour. I can do nothing for myself.
Right. Up you get. Mind the brazier. There we go.
Walk past me and then look back at me.
What?
Someone spoke. I'm sure of it. Could it have been that old man sitting by the brazier? No, surely not. He's drowned in opium. Such an old man. So thin and bent with age. How long has he been there? Pipe dangling down between his knees? It could not have been him.
Holmes!
Shh!
Holmes! What on earth are you doing in this den?
As low as you can. I have excellent ears. If you would get rid of that sottish friend of yours, I should be exceedingly glad to have a little talk with you.
I have a cab outside.
Then pray send him home in it. You may safely trust him, for he appears to be too limp to get into any mischief. I should recommend you also to send a note by the cabman to your wife to say that you have thrown in your lot with me. If you'll wait outside, I shall be with you in 5 minutes.
Very well, Holmes. What a disguise. Incredible. Right. Let's get you home, Isa. And then, an adventure. This way. Kate is pleased to have him back. Now, where is Holmes? Ah, There is the decrepit and ancient Holmes shuffling towards me. I'll just go round this corner. Then all should be safe for him.
I suppose, Watson, that you imagine that I have added opium smoking to cocaine injection and all the other little weaknesses on which you have favoured me with your medical views.
I was certainly surprised to find you there.
But not more so than I to find you there.
I came to find a friend.
And I to find an enemy.
An enemy?
Yes. One of my natural enemies, or shall I say my natural prey. Briefly, Watson, I'm in the midst of a very remarkable inquiry. And I hope to find a clue in the incoherent ramblings of these sots, as I have done before now. Had I been recognized in that den, my life would not have been worth an hour's purchase. There is a trap door at the back of that building, near the corner of Paul's Wharf, which could tell some strange tales of what has passed through it upon the moonless nights.
What? You do not mean bodies?
Aye. Bodies, Watson. We should be rich men if we had £1,000 for every poor devil who has been done to death in that den. It is the vilest murder trap on the whole riverside, and I fear Neville St. Clair has walked into it, never to walk out of it more. But our dog cart should be here.
Now, Watson, if I can be of use.
Oh, a trusty comrade is always of use. And a chronicler? Still more. My room at the Cedars is a double-bedded one.
The Cedars?
Yes. That is Mr. St. Clair's house. I'm staying there while I conduct the inquiry.
Where is it, then?
Near Lee in Kent. We have a 7-mile drive ahead of us.
But I'm all in the dark.
Of course you are. You'll know all about it presently. Jump up here. All right, John. We shall not need you. Here's half a crown. Look out for me tomorrow about 11.
Very good, sir.
So long, then.
Come on, boy.
What is all this about? Holmes is wrapped up in his thoughts and has given nothing away. Good Lord, it's cold on this cart. And to think I could be asleep in a warm bed with the woman I love. I must be mad.
You have a grand gift of silence, Watson. It makes you quite invaluable as a companion. On my word, it is a great thing for me to have someone to talk to. My own thoughts are not ever pleasant. I was wondering what I should say to this dear little woman tonight when she meets me at the door.
You will forget that I know nothing about it.
I shall tell you the facts of the case before we get to Lee. It seems absurdly simple, and yet somehow I can get nothing to go upon. Now I'll state the case clearly and concisely to you, Watson, and maybe you can see a spark where all is dark to me.
Proceed, then.
Some years ago, to be definite, in May 1884, there came to Lee a gentleman, Neville St. Clair by name, who appeared to have plenty of money. He took a large villa and lived generally in good style. By degrees, he made friends, and in 1887, he married the daughter of a local brewer, by whom he now has two children. He had no occupation, but was interested in several companies, and went into town as a rule in the morning, returning by the 5:14 from Cannon Street every night. Mr. St. Clair is now 37 years of age, is a man of temperate habits, and a good father.
Walk on, walk on.
I may add that his whole debts at the present moment, as far as we have been able to ascertain, amount to £88.10, while he has £220 sterling standing to his credit in the Capital and Counties Bank. There is no reason, therefore, to think that money troubles have been weighing on his mind. Last Monday, Mr. St. Clair went into town rather earlier than usual, stating that he had two important commissions to perform and that he would bring his little boy a box of bricks home. Now, by the merest chance, his wife received a telegram on the same day to the effect that a small parcel of considerable value had arrived for her at the offices of the Aberdeen Shipping Company, sent to her by an uncle in Edinburgh. Now, if you are well up on your London, you will know that the office of this company is in Fresno Street, which branches out of Upper Swandam Lane, where you found me tonight. Mrs. St. Clair collected her packet and found herself at exactly 4:35, walking through Swandam Lane on her way back to the station. Have you followed me so far?
It is very clear.
If you remember, Monday was an exceedingly hot day, and Mrs. St. Clair walked slowly, glancing about in the hope of seeing a cab, as she did not like the neighbourhood in which she found herself. While she was walking in this way down Swandam Lane, she suddenly heard an ejaculation, or cry, and was struck cold to see her husband looking down at her. His face was terribly agitated. He waved his hands frantically to her, and then vanished from the window so suddenly that it seemed to her that he'd been plucked by some irresistible force from behind. One singular point which struck her quick feminine eye was that although he wore some dark coat, he had on neither collar nor necktie. She rushed up the steps of the building, which was none other than that which houses the opium den in its cellar, where we met tonight.
Let me in. My husband's in there. What have you done to him?
What is all this noise? Man, there is no need for such commotion.
My husband is in danger. I know he is. Let me pass.
There is no one here. We are closed. No one is here.
Let me in. I must see my husband.
The bar of gold is not open. You cannot come in.
I'll get a policeman. And I'll get help. Oh, my God. Oh, Constable. Constable, please wait. Constable.
No, madam, it's all right. What seems to be the matter?
It's my husband. He's in there, back there. They've taken him.
What?
Come on, please. You must help.
Very well. Lead the way, madam.
Oh, the bar of gold. Right. We'll get him out if he's inside.
Open up. I'm a police officer.
Oh, well, what can I do for you, sir?
I've reason to believe that you are detaining this good lady's husband.
There is no one here, sir. You are most welcome to come and look.
Right. So you're quite sure no one else has been in this room this afternoon?
Yes, sir. Only myself and Hugh Boone.
I see. And what about the cripple? He's not dumb as well, is he?
Oh, no, sir. He can talk. But he has seen no one.
Has anyone been up here, Boone?
No, sir. No one but me and him.
Right. Well, madam, I'm terribly sorry,
I know he was here. I saw him. He's in the most terrible danger. I know it.
Well, madam, perhaps you're a little overwrought. It's been a hot day. Perhaps you only thought you saw him.
I did see him.
Would madam like a glass of water? It is such a hot day.
Look! Oh. Look here! Look! These are the bricks my husband said he was going to buy for our children. He was here.
Well, this puts a different complexion on the matter. What do you say now, Lasker?
Oh, sir, I have no idea. I never saw them before in my life.
Right, then. I'll search every inch of this place. Then both of you can come down to the station.
Steady, boy, steady. Damned uneven here, Watson. Hold on, there. The rooms were carefully examined, and the results all pointed to an abominable crime. The front room was plainly furnished as a sitting room and led into a small bedroom which looked out upon the back of one of the walls. Between the wharf and the bedroom window is a narrow strip of mud, which is dry at low tide, but is covered with water at high tide, with at least 4 feet of water. And the bedroom window was a broad one and open from below. On examination, traces of blood were to be seen upon the windowsill, and several scattered drops were visible upon the wooden floor of the bedroom. Steady! Thrust away behind a curtain, in the front room were all the clothes of Mr. Neville Sinclair, with the exception of his coat. His boots, his socks, his hat, his watch, all were there. There were no signs of violence upon any of these garments, and there were no other traces of Mr. Neville Sinclair. Out of the window, he apparently must have gone, for no other exit could be discovered, and the ominous bloodstains upon the windowsill gave little promise that he could save himself by swimming, for the tide was at its very highest at the moment of the tragedy. And now to the villains who seemed to be immediately implicated in the matter. The Lascar was known to be a man of the vilest antecedents, but, as by Mrs. Sinclair's story, he was known to have been at the foot of the stair within a very few seconds of her husband's appearance at the upper window. He could hardly have been more accessory to the crime. His defence is one of absolute ignorance, and he protested that he had no knowledge as to the doings of Hugh Boone, his lodger, and that he could not account in any way for the presence of the missing gentleman's clothes. So much for the Lascar manager. Now for the sinister cripple who lives upon the second floor of this building, and who was certainly the last human being whose eyes rested upon Neville Sinclair. His name is Hugh Boone, and his hideous face is one which is familiar to every man who goes much into the city. He is a professional beggar, though in order to avoid the police regulations, he pretends to a small trade in wax vestas. Suddenly distance down Threadneedle Street, upon the left-hand side, there is, as you may have remarked, a small angle in the wall. Here it is that this creature takes his daily seat, cross-legged with his tiny stock of matches on his lap, and as he is a piteous spectacle, a small rain of charity descends into the greasy leather cap which lies on the pavement beside him. I have watched the fellow more than once before I ever thought of making his professional acquaintance, and I have been surprised at the harvest which he has reaped. His appearance, you see, is so remarkable that no one can pass him without observing him. A shock of orange hair, a pale face disfigured by a horrible scar, which by its contraction has turned up the outer edge of his upper lip, a bulldog chin, and a pair of very penetrating dark eyes, which present a singular contrast to the colour of his hair. All this marks him out from amid the common crowd of mendicants. And so too does his wit, for he is ever ready with a reply to any piece of chaff which may be thrown at him by a passerby. This is our suspect.
But a cripple? What could he have done single-handed against a man in the prime of life?
He's a cripple in the sense that he walks with a limp. But in other respects, he appears to be a powerful and well-nurtured man. Surely your medical expertise would tell you, Watson, that weakness in one limb is often compensated for by exceptional strength in the others.
Pray continue your narrative.
Mrs. Sinclair had fainted at the sight of the blood upon the windowsill, and she was escorted home in a cab, the policeman having called for some assistance for the lady. One mistake had been made in not arresting Boone instantly, as he was allowed some few minutes in which he might have communicated with his friend, the Lascar. But this thought was soon remedied. The policeman returned and conducted a very thorough search.
Right, what about this blood then, eh?
Please, sir, I have no idea how it comes through.
It's my blood. I cut me finger. Look.
I see. Well, what about these clothes then?
Never seen them before.
Lascar?
No, I don't know how they...
Ah, very convenient. And how do you suppose the lady saw her husband at the window?
He must have been dreaming. Or Barney.
I don't have to listen to you. You're off to the station. Come on.
Get your hands off me.
Please, sir. We're not
nothing. Come on, boy. Not far now. Despite his protestations, this creature was arrested and is now at the police station. The officer returned and continued his search. He hoped that the ebbing tide might afford some fresh clue, and it did, though they hardly found upon the mud what they feared to find. It was Neville Sinclair's coat, and not Neville Sinclair, which lay uncovered as the tide receded. And what do you think they found in his pockets?
I cannot imagine.
No, I didn't think you would guess. Every pocket stuffed with pennies and halfpennies. 421 pennies and 270 halfpennies.
Good Lord.
It was no wonder it had not been swept away by the tide. But a human body is a different matter. There is a fierce eddy between the wharf and the house. It seemed likely enough that the weighted coat had remained when the stripped body had been sucked away into the river.
But I understood that all the other clothes were found in the room. Would the body be dressed in a coat alone?
No, sir. But suppose that this man Boone had thrust Neville Sinclair through the window. There is no human eye which could have seen the deed. What would he do then? It would, of course, instantly strike him that he must get rid of the telltale garments. He would seize the coat and be in the act of throwing it out when it would occur to him that it would swim and not sink. He has little time, for he has heard the scuffling downstairs. There is not an instant to be lost. He rushes to some secret hoard where he has accumulated the fruits of his beggary and stuffs all the coins upon which he can lay his hands into the pockets, and only has time to close the window when the policeman appears.
Oh, it certainly sounds feasible.
Well, we will take it as a working hypothesis for want of a better one. But I must confess I cannot recall any case within my experience which looked at first glance so simple and yet presented such difficulties. We're almost there. Now we shall meet Mrs. Sinclair. I do hate to meet her, Watson, when I have no news of her husband. Here we are. Whoa there. Whoa!
Ah, that must be Mrs. Sinclair. She must be in great distress. What a comely woman. Poor creature. I pray Holmes can shed some light on all this.
Well, no good news.
No.
No bad?
No.
Oh, thank God for that. But come in. You must be weary, for you've had a long day.
Thank you. This is my friend, Dr. Watson. He's been most vital to me in several of my cases, and I am fortunate he could accompany me tonight.
I am delighted to see you. You will, I am sure, forgive anything that may be wanting in our arrangements when you consider the blow that has come so suddenly upon us.
My dear madam, I'm an old campaigner. No apology is needed. I am happy to be of service.
Thank you. Now, Mr. Sherlock Holmes, I should very much like to ask you one or two plain questions, to which I beg that you will give a plain answer.
Certainly, madam.
Do not trouble about my feelings. I am not hysterical, nor given to fainting. I simply wish to hear your real, real opinion.
Upon what point?
In your heart of hearts, do you think Neville is alive?
Well, I...
Frankly, now.
Frankly, then, madam, I do not.
You think that he is dead?
I do.
Murdered?
I don't say so. Perhaps.
And on what day did he meet his death?
On Monday.
Then perhaps, Mr. Holmes, you will be good enough to explain how it is that I have received a letter from him today.
What?
Yes. Today.
May I see it?
Certainly.
Of course, writing on the envelope. Surely this is not your husband's hand, madam?
No, but the enclosure is.
I perceive also that whoever addressed the envelope had to go and inquire as to the address.
How can you tell that?
The name you see is in perfectly black ink, which has dried itself. The rest is of the greyish colour, which shows that blotting paper has been used. If it had been written straight off and then blotted, none would have been of a deep black shade. This man has written the name, and there has been a pause before he wrote the address, which can only mean that he was not familiar with it. It is, of course, a trifle, but there is nothing so important as trifles. Let us now see the letter. There's been an enclosure here.
Yes, there was a ring. His signet ring.
Are you sure that this is your husband's hand?
One of his hands.
One?
His hand, when he wrote hurriedly. It is very unlike his usual writing, and yet I know it well. Dearest, do not be frightened. All will be well. There is a huge error which it may take some time to rectify. Wait in patience, Neville.
Written in pencil on the flyleaf of a book. Octavo size, no watermark. Posted today in Gravesend by a man with a dirty thumb. Ah, and the flap has been gummed, if I'm not very much in error, by a person who had been chewing tobacco. And you have no doubt that this is your husband's hand, madam?
None. Neville wrote those words.
Well, Mrs. Sinclair, the clouds lighten, though I should not venture to say the danger is over.
But he must be alive, Mr. Holmes.
Unless this is a clever forgery to put us on the wrong scent. The ring, after all, proves nothing. It may have been taken from him.
No, but it is his very own writing.
Very well. It may, however, have been written on Monday and only posted today.
That is possible.
If so, much may have happened between.
Oh, you must not discourage me, Mr. Holmes. I know that all is well with him. There is so keen a sympathy between us that I should know if evil came upon him. On the very day that I saw him last, he cut himself in the bedroom, and yet I, in the dining room, rushed upstairs instantly with the utmost certainty that something had happened. Do you think I would respond to such a trifle and yet be ignorant of his death?
I have seen too much not to know that the impression of a woman may be more valuable than the conclusion of an analytical reasoner. But if your husband is alive and able to write letters, why should he remain from you?
I cannot imagine. It is unthinkable.
Mrs. Sinclair, cast your mind back. When you saw your husband, was the window open?
Yes.
Then he might have called to you?
He might, but he only...
Yes, gave an inarticulate cry. A call for help, as you thought.
Yes.
But it might have been a cry of surprise, astonishment at seeing you. And you thought he was pulled back?
He disappeared so suddenly.
He might have leapt back. You did not see anyone else in the room?
No, but the horrible beggar man confessed to having been there.
And he was without his collar or tie?
Yes, I distinctly saw his bare throat.
Thank you, Mrs. Sinclair. Those are the principal points about which I wish to be absolutely clear. We shall now have a little supper and then retire, for we may have a busy day tomorrow.
Right, Holmes. I'm going to get some sleep. I've got to get some rest before tomorrow.
Good night, my dear Watson.
Oh, I see. Holmes is in for a night thinking. Now, what's he doing now? Collecting all the pillows from his bed and all the cushions from the sofa and the armchairs. Now he's arranging them into some sort of Eastern divan. Looks like a pasha sitting cross-legged in that great blue silk dressing gown of his.
and he's laid out an ounce of shag tobacco and a box of matches in front of him. He'll be there all night in a cloud of pipe smoke. All night long. Till he's...
Awake, Watson?
Yes.
Game for a morning drive?
Certainly.
Then dress. No one is stirring.
What time is it? 4:25? Oh, I'm not surprised no one's stirring.
Come on, Watson. Ready yourself.
Oh, nearly there, Holmes.
I think, Watson, you are standing in the presence of one of the most absolute fools in Europe. I deserve to be kicked from here to Charing Cross, but I think I have the key to the affair now.
And where is it?
In the bathroom.
Eh?
Oh, yes. I'm not joking. I have just been there, and I have taken it out, and I have got it in this Gladstone bag. Come on, my boy, and we shall see whether it will not fit the lock. Now, come on. We must be at Bow Street Station before 7:00. It has been in some points a singular case. I confess I have been as blind as a mole, but it is better to learn wisdom late than never to learn it at all.
Come on. Oh, yes.
I wish Holmes wasn't so mysterious. And I do wish he wouldn't go quite so fast.
Who is on duty?
Inspector Bradstreet, sir. Oh, there he is, sir.
Ah, Bradstreet. How are you? I wish I had a quiet word with you, Bradstreet.
Certainly, Mr. Holmes. Step into my room here.
Okay.
What can I do for you, Mr. Holmes?
I've called about that beggar man, Boone.
Oh, yeah.
The one who was charged with being concerned in the disappearance of Mr. Neville St. Clair.
Yeah, he was brought up and remanded for further inquiries.
So I heard. You have him here?
In the cells.
Is he quiet?
Oh, he gives no trouble. But he's a dirty scoundrel.
Dirty?
Yeah. It's all we can do to make him wash his hands. And his face is as black as a tinker's. Well, once his case has been settled, he'll have a regular prison bath. And I think if you saw him, you would agree with me that he needed it.
I should like to see him. Very much.
Will you? Oh, that's easily done. Come this way. You can leave your bag.
No, I think that I'll take it.
Oh, very good. Come this way, if you please. The third on the right, it is. Here we are. He's asleep. You can see him very well. He's a beauty, isn't he?
He certainly needs a wash. I had an idea that he might, and I took the liberty of bringing the tools with me.
A sponge, sir? Oh, you're a funny one.
Now, if you will have the great goodness to open the door very quietly, we will soon make him cut a much more respectable figure.
Well, I don't know why not. He doesn't look a credit to the Bow Street cells, does he?
Let me introduce you to Mr. Neville St. Clair of Lee in the county of Kent. Only this horrid orange wig remains. Voila!
Good God, Holmes!
Great heavens! It is indeed the missing man. Pale, refined-looking chap with black hair. I know him from the photograph.
Be it so. And pray, what am I charged with?
With making away with Mr. Neville. Oh, come, you can't be charged with that. Unless they make a case of attempted suicide of it. Well, I've been 27 years in the force, but this really takes the cake.
If I am Mr. Neville St. Clair, then it is obvious that no crime has been committed and that therefore I am illegally detained.
No crime, but a very great error has been committed. You would have done better to have trusted your wife.
It wasn't the wife. It was the children. God help me, I wouldn't have them ashamed of their father. Oh my God, what an exposure. What can I do?
If you leave it to a court of law to clear the matter up, of course, you can hardly avoid publicity. On the other hand, if you convince the police authorities that there is no possible case against you, I do not know that there is any reason that the details should find their way into the papers. Inspector Bradstreet would, I am sure, make notes upon anything which you might tell us and submit it to the proper authorities.
God bless you. I would have endured imprisonment, aye, even execution, rather than have left my miserable secret as a family blot to my children.
They need know nothing. But only if you tell your story now and swear never to resurrect Hugh Boone, the notorious beggar.
willingly. In brief, then, my story is this. I was a journalist. I was sent to write a story on begging in the metropolis. It was only by trying to beg that I could get the facts upon which to base my article. I was also once an actor and had learned all the secrets of makeup. I was famous in the green room for my skill. I painted my face, and to make myself look as pitiable as possible, I made a good scar. Then, with a red head of hair and an appropriate costume, I took my station in the busiest part of the city. For 7 hours, I plied my trade. And when I returned home in the evening, I found to my surprise that I had received no less than 26 shillings and 4p. I wrote my articles and thought little more of the matter until some time later I backed a bill for a friend and had a writ served on me for £25. I was at my wit's end where to get the money, but a sudden idea came to me. I begged a fortnight's grace from the creditor, asked for a holiday from my employers, and spent the time begging in the city under my disguise. In 10 days, I had the money and paid the debt. Well, you can imagine how hard it was to settle down to arduous work at £2 a week when I knew that I could earn as much in a day by smearing my face with a little paint, laying my cap on the ground and sitting still. It was a long fight between my pride and the money, but the dollars won at last, and I threw up reporting and sat day after day, filling my pockets with coppers. It was a terrible secret I was never to share with my wife. When she saw me at the window, I thought all was lost. I just had time to apply my makeup and throw my coat weighted with coins into the river. In the course of hurriedly opening the window, I reopened a small cut which I'd inflicted upon myself in the bedroom that morning. I was quite relieved when the police arrived that I was arrested for the murder of Neville Sinclair and not revealed as the man himself.
Well, sir, I think you've wasted quite enough of our time over the last week. If the police are to overlook all this, we must hear no more of Hugh Boone the beggar.
I have sworn it by the most solemn oaths which a man can take.
Well, in that case, I think that it is probable that no further steps may be taken. But if you are found again, then all must come out. Sure, Mr. Holmes, we are all very much indebted to you for having cleared the matter up. Mm. I wish I knew how you reach your results.
I reached this one by sitting upon 5 pillows and consuming an ounce of shag. I think, Watson, that if we drive to Baker Street, we shall just be in time for breakfast.
Oh, good.
私が1889年6月の夜遅く、アヘンクスなどに出かける羽目になったのは、妻の友達の夫で私の患者でもあるアイザ・ホイットニーのせいである。ホイットニーは学生時代の愚かな好奇心が高じて、 ついに本物のアヘン中毒者になってしまったのだ。その夜もケイト・ホイットニーがやってきて、夫が二日も帰らない。行く先は多分アッパースワンダム通りにある金の棒という店だから、どうか連れ戻してきてほしいと泣いて訴えたのである。アッパースワンダム通りはロンドン橋の北側の岸に並ぶ荷上げ場の裏手にある。既製服の店と居酒屋の間の急な段々を、ホラー穴の入り口みたいに暗くなるところまで降りていくと、そこに目的のアヘン靴があった。私は勇気を振るって戸口を開けた。中は天井の低い細長い部屋で、移民船の船室のように寝台が壇上に作られ、どの寝台にもどす黒く濁ったアヘンの煙がもうもうと立ち込めている。寝台には様々な姿勢で人々が横たわっていた。背中を丸めたり、膝を曲げたり、ぐっと頭を反らし顎を突き出したりして、誰もが夢の中をさまよっている。私を客だと思ってマレー人の給仕がパイプと1回分の麻薬を手に急いでやってきて、空いている寝台を教えてくれた。ごめん、私はアヘンを吸いに来たんじゃないんだ。友達のアイザ・ホイットニーという人が来ているはずだ。その人に話があってね。薄暗い寝台を一つ一つ覗き込み、やっとのことでホイットニーを見つけることができた。髪の毛は乱れ、衰えきった青白い顔を起こして彼は言った。
ワットソンさん、今何時です？
12時ちょっと前ですよ。
何曜日の？
金曜日です。6月19日。
水曜日でしょ。そうなんでしょ、人を驚かそうと思って金曜日なんて言ったんでしょ。
本当に金曜日ですよ。さあ、馬車を外に待たせてあります。立って。
ダメなんだ、自分じゃ何にもできない。感情もしなくては。ワトソンさん、すまない、奥でいくらだか聞いてきてください。
私は店の奥へ行った。そしてストーブのそばの腰掛けに座っていた背の高い老人の脇を通り抜けようとした時、服の裾がぐいと引かれた。
通り過ぎたらちょいと振り向いてごらんよ。
それは足元の老人の口から出たものとしか思えないのだが、ちらっと見るとひどく痩せてシワだらけで、腰の曲がった老人は何事もなかったようにアヘンパイプを両膝の間にだらりと下げて、ぼーっと宙を見据えている。私はそのまま 2,3 歩先へ行って老人の方を振り返った。その瞬間、あっと声を立てそうになった。他の者には見えないが、私にだけ顔が見えるように彼は体をねじ向けたのであるが、不思議なことにその顔にはシワ一つなく、体もシャンとして、どんより濁っていた目も生き生きと輝いている。シャーロック・ホームズがそこにいたのだ。私はホームズに会ったからと妻へ簡単な手紙を書き、御車に託すことにした。ホイットニーを乗せた馬車が闇の中に姿を消すまで見送っていると、アヘン靴から一人の老人が出てきた。私たちはいつとはなく並んで歩いていた。老人は二つ目の角までは腰を曲げ、よぼよぼと歩いていたが、そこで素早く辺りを見回し、ぐっと腰を伸ばした。あんなところで君と会うなんてね、驚いたよ。
いや、僕も同じさ。アヘン靴に君が現れるとはね。
友人を探すためだよ。
僕は敵を探しに行った。
敵？
そう、僕の宿命的な敵、犯罪者のね。いや、つまりね、今非常に面倒な事件を調べてるのさ。ところがあそこで僕だということが分かったら、命がいくつあっても足りないだろうよ。前にあの店を勝手に利用したことがあって、経営者のインド人が必ず僕に復讐してやると言ってるんだ。あの建物の荷上げ場寄りの裏口から月のない夜などに何が運び出されるか知ってるかい？
まさか死体じゃないだろうな。
その死体さ。 この辺りであの家ほど忌まわしい呪われた場所はないって言っていいと思うよ。だからネビル・セントクレアもあの家へ入ったっきりで二度と出てこないのではないかと心配してるのさ。
ネビル・セントクレア、
あ、ちょっと待ってくれ。馬車がこの辺にいるはずなんだ。さあ、ワッツ。
あ、
ジョン、もう帰っていいよ。そうだな、明日の11時頃また頼む。突然話していいよ。はい、ご苦労様。
どこへ向かってるんだい。
ケント州のリーダー。7マイルはあるかな。
そこに何があるんだ。
ネビル・セントクレアの家だ。僕は今そこへ泊まってる。
事件のこと話してくれるんだろうね。
もちろん。僕にわからないことを君が何か発見してくれるとありがたいが。
じゃあ早く話をしろよ。
うん。数年前、まあ、正確に言えば1884年5月だが、リーの町へネビル・セントクレアという金持ちらしい男がやってきた。そして別荘風の大きな家を手に入れ、豪勢に暮らしていた。近所との交際も広げ、87年にはその地方の醸造家の娘と結婚をして、現在では2人の子供まである。4つ5つの会社に関係していて、毎日ロンドンへ出て行き、5時14分キャノン駅発の列車で帰ってくる。今は37歳だが、温厚な人物で、夫としては善良、父としては情愛に満ち、誰からも好かれる人物だ。月曜日、セントクレア氏はいつもより少し早めに家を出たが、出掛けに男の子に積み木を一箱買ってくると約束をした。
積み木ね。
うん。偶然に同じ日、奥さんにアバディン汽船会社まで小包を取りに行く用事ができた。この汽船会社がさっきのアヘン窟のあるアッパースワンダム通りの近くのフレスノ街にあることは知ってるね。
知っている。
セントクレア夫人はお昼を済ませてロンドンに出掛け、2、3の買い物をしてから汽船会社に行った。小包を受け取ってスワンダム通りを駅に向かって歩いていたのがちょうど4時35分だった。どうだここまでは。
うん、よくわかるよ。
うん。この月曜日ひどく暑かった。夫人は辻馬車を探してキョロキョロあたりを見回しながら歩いていたんだが、突然あっという叫び声が聞こえたので、何気なく声のした方を見上げ驚いて息が止まりそうになった。その建物の3階の窓に夫の顔が見えたからなんだ。あっと叫んだのは夫で、彼は夫人を手招きしたように見えたが、たちまち誰かに引っ張られるように窓の奥へ姿が消えた。セントクレア氏はひどく興奮していた様子で、家を出るとき着ていた黒っぽい上着を着ていたが、カラーもネクタイもつけていなかったということだ。夫人は夫が危険な目に遭っているのを感じ、その建物へ飛び込んだ。僕たちが会ったのはアヘン窟だ。例の表の部屋を抜けて奥の階段を2階へ上がろうとしたが、経営者のインド人に止められ表へ押し出されてしまった。ますます不安になった夫人は巡回中の警官たちを連れて、今度はインド人を押しのけてやっと3階のセントクレア署を見た部屋へ行った。だがもう影も形もない。3階全体を探したが、そこに住んでいる足の悪い汚い小敷のような男以外誰一人発見できなかった。警官の質問にインド人の経営者も小敷のような男もこの部屋には誰も入らなかったと言い張った。その時夫人がテーブルの上に白木の箱が置いてあるのに気づいた。飛びついて蓋を取ってみると中から積み木がこぼれ落ちた。夫が子供たちに約束したお土産に違いない。この発見に小敷のような男は明らかに慌てた様子を示した。警官たちは犯罪の匂いを嗅ぎ取った。犯行の証拠も現れた。この部屋の奥の寝室の窓の下は満潮時に水が上げてくるが、その窓枠に血がついていた。今のカーテンの後ろからセントクレア氏の衣類が上着を覗いてそっくり出てきた。セントクレア氏は窓から川へ逃げたのか、それとも死体となって投げ捨てられたのかはっきりしない。 事件に関係したと思われるのはインド人だが、夫人の話によれば夫の顔を見てすぐにこの家に駆け込んだ時には階段の下にいたというのだから、まあ、関係があるとしても主犯ではない。事件のあった部屋を借りている足の悪い男はヒューブーンといって本物の小敷なのだが、彼の醜い顔はシティあたりでかなりよく見かけるから君も知ってるだろ
う。うん、そう言われれば見たような気がする。
赤い髪の毛をもじゃもじゃさせて青白い顔に恐ろしい傷がある。それが引き連れになって上唇の端が一方だけニャーッと上へ吊り上がっていて、もう嫌に鋭い黒目がギロリと光っているので目立つやつなんだ。ところがこの男、外見からは想像できないユーモア精神の持ち主で、通行人の投げかける言葉に実に血の利いた受け答えをするんで、かなり人気者なんだ。だから一日の稼ぎもかなり多い。この男がセントクレア氏を最後に見たのは間違いのないところだ。
窓枠についていた血はセントクレアのかな。
小敷の部分は自分の血だと言ってる。まあ、確かに薬指の先に怪我をしていた。
でもその男は逮捕したんだろ
う。夫人が窓に夫の顔を見たのは夢か暑さにやられたせいだろうって最後まで不服を言っていたのね。
確かに犯人だという証拠はないね。
まあそれからセントクレア氏の上着が出てきたんだ。窓下の水が干潮で引いた後に額ではなく上着だけが残った。その上着のポケットに何が入ってたと思う。
さあ、わからないな。
あちこちのポケットに1ペンスと半ペンスの銅貨がザクザク入っていたんだ。みんなで1ペンスが421枚、半ペンスが270枚。
すると上着は流されなかったけど死体は潮に持っていかれたのかな。
死体に上着だけ着せたっていうのはどうかな。何しろ衣類は下着まで全部置いてあったんだから。
死体は別のところへ運んで衣類の始末を始めたら婦人や警官が上がってきて間に合わなくなった。
それも一つの解釈だね。だがまだ疑問が残ってるんだ。ネビル・セントクレア氏は一体アヘン窟で何をしていたか。
もし彼がアヘン中毒者じゃなければだがね。馬車は大きな家の前に止まった。玄関から出てきた小柄で金髪のセントクレア夫人をホームズは私に紹介した。二人はそれから夜食の用意のできている明るい食堂に案内された。
ホームズさん、あなたは主人がまだ生きているとお考えでしょうか。
そうですね。
はっきりおっしゃってください。
私は難しいのではないかと思ってます。
死んでいるとお考えなのですね。
その通りです。
殺されたのでしょうか。
いや、それは何とも。あるいは
死んだとしたらいつのことでしょう。
月曜日、お出かけになった日ですね。
すると今日来たこの手紙、主人のネビルの手紙はどういうことになりますの。
手紙ですって。
ええ、
拝見していいですか。
どうぞ。
ホームズはひったくらんばかりに夫人の手から手紙を取り、テーブルの上に開き、ランプを引き寄せ熱心に調べた。私も席を立って後ろから覗き込んだ。封筒はひどい安物で、グレーブセント局の消印があり、日付は今日、いや、もう夜半もだいぶ過ぎているから前日と言った方が正確だろう。
乱暴な字だな。奥さん、封筒の字はご主人の字と違いますね。
はい、でも中は間違いなく主人のです。
封筒の字には見覚えがありませんか。
いいえ。
この手紙には何か同封されていたでしょう。
はい、指輪が主人の認め印付きの指輪です。
この手紙はだいぶ急いで書いたものですね。決して心配することはない、万事すぐに収まる、こういうことになったのも大変な手違いがあったからだ。だが間もなく無事に収まる、しばらく辛抱して待っていてください、ネビル。八つ折りの何かの本の見返しをちぎって鉛筆で書いてある。今日グレーブセントで親指の汚れた男が投函していた。封をした男は紙タバコをやりながら封筒を舐めた。
奥さん、
どうやら少し希望が見えてきました。いや、まだ喜ぶのは早いと思いますが。
でも、まだ生きていることだけははっきりしましたわ。
これが我々の目をくらますための偽手紙でない限りはね。
ホームズさん、がっかりさせないでください。私、主人が無事なことをはっきり感じています。主人と私はお互いに言葉以上に心が通じ合うのです。あの月曜日の朝、主人は寝室で顔を剃っていて怪我をしました。私はその時この食堂にいたんですが、何かを感じて2階へ飛んでいったくらいなんです。こんな指先の怪我でさえわかるくらいですから、生きているか死んでいるかくらいははっきりわかります。
なるほど、まあ、今までの経験でも女性の直感が推理にとって大変貴重な役割を果たしたことは何度もありました。いや、今回もそうだと思うことにして。それならご主人は生きているのになぜ帰ってこないのでしょうか。
わかりません。それが私にも。
前にも伺ったことですが、ご主人はアヘンをおやりになってはいませんね。
絶対に。
アッパースワンダム通りのことを口にしたことも
ありません。
私たちにあてがわれた部屋は大きくて居心地がよく、寝台が2つあった。私はひどく疲れていたので早速潜り込んだが、ホームズは違う。彼は未解決の問題があると少しも休むということをせず、繰り返し繰り返し考え、事実の配列を変えてみたり、あらゆる方向から考察を加えたりする。そしてついに真相を突き止めるか、真相を突き止めるには材料が不足しているという結論に達するまでは決して考えることをやめない。この日もホームズは膝の前に一音水輪の強い刻みタバコとマッチの箱を置いてあぐらをかき、愛用のブライヤーのパイプを口にぼんやりと天井の一角を見据え、わしのように鋭い緊張した顔で紫の煙を立ち上らせながら無言の行をしている姿が、このぐらいランプの光の中に見えていた。私はいつの間にか眠り込み、何かの物音で目を覚ますと、ホームズ朝日の差し込む中で夕べと同じ姿勢を崩さずにいた。パイプからは依然として紫の煙が立ち上り、部屋の中は濃い煙でもうもうとしている。夕べのタバコはほとんど残っていない。
ワッソン、目が覚めたかい。
ああ、
朝食前に一走りどうだい。
ああ、いいね。
じゃあ服着ろよ。まだ誰も起きないようだが、馬蹄の寝る場所は知ってるから、場所はすぐ出せる。僕は自分の到達した結論が正しいかどうかをこれから検証するつもりだ。ワッツン、昨日までの僕はヨーロッパ一の愚か者だったという気がする。しかし、どうやら解決の鍵を握ったようだ。
その鍵はどこにあるんだい。
浴室にあった。
浴室だって。
浴室から取ってきて、このカバンに入れてある。
ロンドン市内に入ると、テムズ川を渡りウェリントン街を突破してくるりと右へ曲がるとボーガイだ。ホームズはここにある軽犯罪裁判所でもよく顔を知られていたので、門番を務めていた二人の警官がすぐ敬礼し、私たちを中へ案内していた。
ああ、警部、おはよう。ちょっとお願いしたいことがあるんですがね。
いやあ、ホームズさん、こんな朝早くからどんなご用ですか。
例のネビル・セントクレア氏失踪事件の容疑者、乞食のヒュー・ブーンのことですが。
ああ、あの男なら取り調べのために拘留してありますよ。
まだここですね。
留置場に入れてあります。
おとなしくしてますか。
ああ、全く手数がかかりません。しかし恐ろしく汚いやつですな。
そんなに汚いですか。
汚いのなんのって、やっと手だけ洗わせましたが、顔はまるで煙突掃除人のように真っ黒です。まあ、ご覧になればわかります。
ぜひ会ってみたいですね。
それでしたらご案内しましょう。カバンはここにお置きになって結構です。
いやいや、これは持っていきますよ。
警部は先に立って廊下を進み、貫抜きのあるドアを開けて回り階段を降りて、両側にドアがいくつも並ぶ白壁の廊下に私たちを導いた。
右側の3番目がそうです。この小窓から見えますよ。今は眠ってます。
私たちは 小さな格子窓に目を当てて中を覗き込んだ。留置人は顔をこちらに向けて熟睡し、深い静かな呼吸をしていた。中柄の男で、古事記商売にふさわしいボロ服の裂け目から色物のシャツが見えている。確かに汚い。その上、目から顎にかけて古傷があって、その引きつりのため上唇が一方にめくり上がり、三本の歯が今にも噛みつきそうにむき出されている。そしてもじゃもじゃの赤い髪の毛。
どうです、大したもんでしょう。
なるほど、確かに顔を洗う必要があるな。私はこんなことじゃないかと思ってこれを用意してきました
よ。ホームズはカバンを開け、驚いたことに中からすこぶる大きな入浴用の海綿を取り出した。
これは面白い。
じゃあドアをそっと開けてください。大いに男っぷりを上げてやりましょう。
警部は鍵を出し静かにドアを開けたので、私たちはそっと中に入った。ブーンは少し寝返りを打ったが、すぐまた深い眠りに落ちていった。ホームズは水で海面を十分に湿らせ、眠っている小敷の顔を二度縦と横にぐいっと強くこすった。
皆さん、ケント州リー氏のネビル・セントクレア氏をご紹介します。
私は未だかつてあんな光景を見たことがない。眠っていた男の顔は海面でこすられ、木の皮を剥ぐように剥がれてしまったのである。汚らしい褐色の皮膚も、恐ろしい古傷も、気味悪く嘲笑するかのように見えた唇の引きつれも全て消えてしまった。もじゃもじゃの赤毛もぐいっと引っ張ると簡単に取れた。すると黒い髪と滑らかな肌を持ち、青白い寂しげな顔の上品な感じさえする男は、寝台の上に起き上がり、眠そうに目をこすり、キョロキョロあたりを見回して、突然自分の正体が暴露されたことを悟り、驚いて枕へ顔をうずめた。
私はこの秘密が暴かれて妻や子供たちに苦痛を与えるくらいなら、いっそ懲役に服した方が、いえ死刑になってもよいと思ったんです。私の父は教師で、私も相当の教育を受けています。若い頃は旅をしたり役者をしていたこともありましたが、最後にロンドンで夕刊誌の記者になりました。ある時編集長からロンドンの古事記を取材して記事を書くよう命ぜられました。それが私の冒険の始まりです。取材のためには古事記になるほかはないと考えました。メイキャップは芝居をやっていた頃から得意でしたから、できるだけ哀れっぽい顔にするために古い傷を作り、唇がめくれ上がるようにしました。赤い髪にして今着ているようなボロ服でシティの街角に座っていますと、驚くほどのお金がもらえました。初めての日が確か26シリングと4ペンスでしたよ。でもこれは記事のためでした。記事を書き上げるとそのことも忘れていましたが、その後友人の手形に裏書きをしたため25ポンドの支払いを命じられました。途方に暮れた私の頭に浮かんだのがこれでした。新聞社を休み変装して古事記を始めました。なんと借金を10日で返すことができたんです。記者の給料は週に20ポンドでした。私は長いこと悩みましたが、とうとう誇りを捨てたんです。新聞記者を辞め、古事記を本職にしました。貯金もでき、田舎に家も買いました。そして結婚までしてしまったんです。私の秘密を知っているのはたった一人、アヘン窟の経営者だけです。アヘン窟の3階の部屋から、私は毎朝汚らしい古事記として出かけ、夜は洒落た服装のロンドンの紳士に早変わりをしていました。それがこの月曜日、一日の仕事が終わってあの部屋で着替えをしているとき、ふと窓から見下ろすと、妻が通りに立って私の方を見ているではありませんか。 私は思わずあっと叫んで腕を上げて顔を隠しましたが、後の祭りです。誰も3階に上げるなと主人に頼んで大急ぎで小敷の姿に戻りましたが、そう、この後のことは皆さんもご存知ですね。
あの手紙はいつ書いたんです？
警官たちの目を盗んで妻に心配するなって書いたんです。それから指輪を抜いてインド人にそっと渡しました。
あれは昨日やっと奥さんの手に渡りましたよ。
あのインド人にはずっと監視をつけておきましたからね。
多分それで投函できなかったかな。ところでセントクレアさん、あなたは犯罪こそ犯してはいませんが大きな不正を働いたと思いますが、奥さんや子供さんのために警察もこの秘密をきっと守ってくれると思いますが、その代わり二度とヒュー・ブーンという小敷がロンドンに現れることがあってはなりませんね。
ええ、ヒュー・ブーンは死にました、ホームズさん。